Welcome, everyone. We're glad you joined us. My name is Brad Rieger. I'm the host of A Basic Conversation. And as always, I have the privilege of sitting across from our theologian, Father Jim Basic. Always good to be with you, Father Basic.
I'm looking forward to it, Brad.
Not an easy topic, but I think we can work our way through it. So we're going to talk about political discourse, and maybe the subtext is the search for truth, or maybe the elusiveness of truth.
Okay. Truth, a big word, huh?
Big word.
Quite a word.
It seems like it shouldn't be that hard, but it seems like we're struggling with that.
Yeah, well, I was struggling with it. I mean, it was a Time magazine article called, "Is Truth Dead?" It was reminiscent of, they had an article in the 60s about, "Is God Dead?" On the cover. Now they had another cover, "Is Truth Dead?" And in the article, they talk about a post-truth society, a society in which truth is no longer valued, in which people talk about alternative facts. And the burden of the article is that you can't have a viable political order if you don't have a sense of truth. And that, I mean, it was a very foreboding article in saying, well, what do we do if we can't get agreement on what's going on what facts are, and when we're arguing about the fact is there's different alternative facts. I mean, how do you have a discussion that way? So it's a very alarming article, but it pointed to a real problem in our culture today, the sense that truth is not valued. It often comes out in the political realm, that politicians don't speak the truth and that people don't trust them and people don't trust the media, people don't trust religious authorities, you know. So we got a big problem. We got to figure out what to do about it.
And it seemed like truth was just a given that parents would work with kids with and teachers would reinforce and our corporate and civic leaders would reinforce. That was just a given, but now it's not.
Yeah, it's actually a sort of complex problem.
Yes, it is.
In some ways. When we talk about truth in the history of philosophy, there's been various ways of trying to understand truth. What is truth? In the classical tradition, truth is the adequation of mind and reality. It means we are in touch with that. There's been another way of, in America, there's been a lot of talk about pragmatic truth. Something is true if it works. That's William James, John Dewey, people like that. So in the United States, we have that. And there's another theory, we call it the coherence theory, that the claim satisfies a lot of questions. It helps us deal with a lot of different facts. So actually, philosophically, you know, there's debates about how to determine what is true or what is not. But if you don't get some fundamental agreement, you can't have a workable society. You can't have a politics that works. And we're seeing that. I mean, in our country now, the Time magazine article was capturing something about, well, you can't have a discussion between two different political viewpoints if we don't agree on what's going on, of what we're talking about. So yeah, that sets the stage, yeah.
And we always, in our conversations here, we always try to grapple with these big issues from the Christian perspective,
exactly,
and maybe to provide a roadmap out. So there have been some theologians and priests that have shared some things. And so how about we touch on a couple of those? And
yeah, I think it's go back to the scriptures. The truth will set you free. Jesus came to teach the truth to people. He claimed to be the wisdom of the Father. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely, there's a Christian take on this. I mean, a Christian outlook on truth has to see it centered in God's truth. God is the source of all truth. Jesus is the truth of God made manifest in our world. So we would look to Jesus to see our guide for searching out truth. He said he sent the Holy Spirit, the Paraclete, the Spirit of truth. Mm. The Spirit and Paraclete, the Spirit of truth, the Advocate that would be with us forever. As Jesus says, better if I go away, because then I'll send you this advocate, the spirit, the paraclete, and that's the spirit of truth who will guide you to the truth. So we think the search for truth isn't just a personal whim or sort of an idiosyncratic effort on our part. It has a Christian framework for us, which that's what we're doing. I'm a Catholic priest, so right. And supposedly a theologian, so I have to always take into account the Christian perspective.
And you've had a first-person encounter with a great mind and someone that has endured a great deal and focused on truth, and that's Father Vaclav Mali.
One of the shaping events of my life, Brad. I've talked about it in the past, and Vaclav Mali was a priest. He was ordained, I think, in 1976, if I remember correctly, and he was signed what they call Charter 77. So he's in Prague. He's a priest of the Diocese of Prague, Czechoslovakia. They're under the communist regime, heavy-handed and so on. And so he signed, there was a Charter 77 that was issued that challenging the communist regime to be more humane in what they did and so on. And because of that, he was under surveillance constantly. And so he was put in jail. He was in 7 months in jail. One occasion he was tortured terribly. And he always said, I was totally alone. I was totally abandoned to these vicious guards. And he had only his faith in God. And so he played a major role in what we call the Velvet Revolution. So the Czechs overthrew the communist regime without firing a shot, the Velvet Revolution, 1989. And his friend, Václav Havel, who was a playwright, became president of the new Czech Republic. And Havel invited him to be Václav Mali, to be part of the new government, and he didn't want to do that. He wanted to remain a critic of the government, even the critic of his friend Havel. They were very close. He says Havel was said that he was an atheist, and but Mali said that over the years he became an anonymous Christian. That's a phrase from Karl Rahner. An anonymous Christian is one who lives by Christian values and Christian norms, but doesn't name it, doesn't say, well, I'm following Jesus, but they love their neighbor, anonymous. So he said that Havel was really an anonymous Christian, which was interesting, but he wouldn't be part of the government. And so, yes, I had the, shortly after the Velvet Revolution, I was in Europe. I had given some talks in Moscow to one of their think tanks and traveled to Prague from there. And I got to have a personal meeting with Václav Mali in his apartment. Still had the camera outside the door. Everyone who came to see him was recorded. It was a tiny little apartment. He had his books on his, many of his books on his bed that he had to move when he was going to sleep at night. And so, and later on, I mean, to fill in the picture, he became a bishop. Bishop of Prague, he's auxiliary bishop of Prague yet today. So, yeah, we had this wonderful conversation. He talked about the torture he underwent, and but his what he said he learned was you had to fight for the truth. That would be the major theme. You have to fight for truth. You have to challenge every lie. You see, so the communists weren't asking him to renounce the faith or anything. What they wanted, what they torture and everything, imprisonment was, just mute your criticism a little. Mm. Just mute it. You know, don't be so harsh. That's what they were asking him to do. And he said, you can't do that. You cannot give in one inch to lies. And you have to fight for every bit of truth, every day, all your life. So that was his message that he came with in his terrible routine that he went through. Even after they let him out of prison, he worked in a factory for many years. He wasn't allowed to function as a priest. So, and then you get to the part, he says, but you're living in the Western world. You got your own problems. Mm-hmm. You know, in the United States, you're not perfect either. And you, pointing to me, should fight for truth in your setting. You have to stand up for truth, and you can't give in one inch to the lies. You can't give in any little bit. You have to struggle to maintain truth personally. No, try to be truthful in your relationships with other people. Try not to exaggerate when you're talking to people. Try to learn from other people's truth, what they see. So he's given me a whole homily, in a sense, a whole. So when I came back to the United States and I gave a couple of my first homilies, I remember one of my parishioners said, "Something happened to you in Czechoslovakia."
You had some firebrand in your words.
Yeah, really. What happened to you? You're preaching better, preaching differently, and so on. So I'm always grateful. He's still alive today. Yeah. I never was in touch with him again. That was the only time I ever saw him. And I remember what he said, that his mission now, after they lived under a communist regime for so many years, that people learned to be dependent, that people weren't thinking for themselves. You know, the students, the teachers had a way of questioning the students to see if their parents were teaching them. So the teacher would say to the third graders, "Now let's all make the sign of the cross together." And he knew every student that was learning the prayers from their parents. So, yeah, a shaping experience. And in a post-truth American society, you have to fight for truth, you have to stand up for what is accurate and so on.
And that was late 80s, obviously, our country. We had Vietnam and we had Watergate.
Right.
We had some really bad examples of the truth not being in vogue.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. There's two other that I've seen in lectures that you've brought up, two other individuals. That's John Courtney Murray and Hannah Arendt.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about those. John Courtney Murray is probably the greatest Catholic theologian in the history of the United States. Jesuit, well-educated, really smart man. I only heard him talk a couple times. Just a brilliant man. And he was big on the American spirit. His book is We Hold These Truths, is the title of his best-known book. We Hold These Truths, from our Declaration of Independence. And so he had a lot to say about this whole idea of truth. And so what he said was that we have to have a basis for conversation. You have to be able to argue. And without holding certain, his mind, certain philosophical truths and certain things that are part of our American experiment, that we can't get any place. We can't argue. You got to argue. That was his big point. You have to learn, in a political society, you have to learn how to argue. And part of what we try to use is that we hold these truths to be self-evident. We're created by God, and that we're endowed with certain rights, inalienable rights. So we have a dignity and worth. And that we have a sort of he used the phrase public philosophy, or I would say a dominant ethos of a shared experience. We live in a country where all of us are trying to participate in an experiment in democracy. We've seen it as an experiment. In other words, our country isn't based on land or soil or how other countries have functioned. We're based on an ideal. We're all created equal, and are called to participate. So we've constantly struggled to make that experiment in democracy work. And he said, so we have to draw on that shared experience, a common struggle. We live in a land that's rich and fertile. We've got oceans that protect us. We've had so many advantages. And that struggle to be true to our better angels, as Abraham Lincoln called it, has been hard. In other words, we've had slavery. We've had Reconstruction that went so badly in our country. know, we've had a struggle to overcome racial prejudice, all kind of struggles, and the need that we have to be, his phrase, we have to be locked in argument. In other words, you need legislators who actually talk to one another, who know one another, congresspeople who will then argue out difference of opinion. And of course, in a post-truth society, that's become harder and harder to make happen. One of the things that Murray talked about was avoiding utopianism. By utopianism, he meant a sense that we're going to get it all together. We're going to find a final solution. We're going to solve the whole thing somehow in one big thing. He said, no, it's step by step. And it's compromise. It's seeking what is. And so we see that in our own political history when we made progress. It was usually because we had to compromise. Politicians had to figure out so he said, don't get into utopianism. It's never going to be perfect. Democracy is always going to be messy. It's going to be hard. It's authoritarianism is easy. You just tell everyone what to do.
Right.
Democracy is hard when you're trying to find political solutions to questions like that. So we hold these truths to be self-evident. He said we should gather around that and find our way forward. What he warned us against, what he called the barbarians. The barbarians are the ones right now who are fostering a post-truth society. The barbarians favor monologue over dialogue. The barbarians think they got all the answers. They don't need to listen to anybody else. That they will solve the problems in some authoritarian fashion. And Murray said, beware the barbarians. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that in our culture today. He was a great man. He was a man of principle. And he had a great influence on the Second Vatican Council. You know, he changed our whole outlook on religious freedom. For centuries, the church said, if we're in power like we were in Spain under Franco, we should control things. Church should control things. And Martin said, no, it works better in the United States where we don't have privilege. We have freedom. We don't need privilege as Catholics. You know, we came into this country a nativist prejudice, but we made it because we had freedom. And the church thrives under freedom. Jesus said, truth will set you free. Jesus came to free us. So, yeah, Courtney Murray.
And Hannah Arendt, she wrote The Truth in Politics in The New Yorker in 1967.
Yeah.
What takeaways did you have?
Of course, Hannah Arendt comes out of the Nazi experience. She's a Jew living in Germany. She escaped from the Hitler regime, came to the United States, woman philosopher, very bright, and so on. And a lot of her own sense of what's going on comes out of her experience in Nazi Germany. So she said there's different kinds of truth. There's philosophical truth that Murray talks about. You know? There's scientific truth that we've gradually learned more from science about what the world's really like. Like the world is not flat. You know, it's and it didn't start 5,000 years ago, you know. So there's scientific truth. And there's factual truth. And she said, in the public arena, in government, we argue about philosophical truth. We argue about what's the best way to control inflation. We can argue about, how we could reduce the deficit. We could argue about a whole lot of things, you know. But what you can't have is a denial of factual truth, that that's what Hitler did. He made up a new truth that made the Jews the scapegoats, fostered a whole lie, a big lie. That phrase comes from out of the Nazi experience, the big lie. Time magazine brings that up. We're in danger of the big lie in our own country. And so she said, we have to get back to factual truth. And without that, it's impossible to have a democracy. So she's terrible about alternative facts. It's not alternative facts. There's whatever happened. Now, it's it's tricky. I don't know how much I should get into it. But anyway, that's what I get out of Hannah Arendt. In our own country today, we have to get agreement on what has actually happened and what are the factual truths, and we have to stand up for them.
And it's also important in order to survive in a pluralistic democracy.
Can't do it without it. Okay. Should we do more of that? How much time do we have?
You're doing great.
Well,
what else?
Good.
Do you have something else about?
I'm thinking, but go ahead. What are you going next?
Well, I think it's the spirituality of truth telling. There's like 9 principles that you've come up with, you borrowed from others, and put it all together. To me, it provided a good. So,
what did I say about that?
Well, let me just throw a couple at you.
Yeah.
Try to identify rationalization.
Oh, and personal.
Avoid
exaggerations.
Like
that. Let's stay with that a minute. Yeah. So that's amount to a personal spirituality when we're all danger of rationalizations, you know. I mean, right. I mean, I didn't succeed in the job because the boss hated me.
Right.
You know, we always can come up for reasons why something didn't go well. And part of that is being self-reflective, of going back to how our mind operates and what we're in danger of messing up. So I always have an excuse when I don't do it right. It's never my fault. It's always somebody else's fault. That's my character. That's my flaw. Now I got to learn from that, right? I got to try to do better with that. So what are my most prominent temptations to rationalization? Self-knowledge. The Greeks said, know thyself. That's got to start with that.
How about this one? Strive for authenticity and honesty in relationships.
Yeah, for sure. I think that it's always a question of dialogue. I mean, Pope Francis is so big on this. You need a culture of accompaniment, a culture of encounter, where it's how we deal with our relationships and how honest are we in dealing with people. I mean, how much in married life do people share with one another, spouses share with one another. And that's so what I think part of, one of the things I would say about that, I mean, yeah, should this young couple, should a woman that had an abortion before she was married, should she tell her husband or not? Well, candid, if you said frankness is the major virtue, then she should tell him. But I've dealt with situations where I've said, don't tell them. You know, it's going to make it worse. So charity governs our interactions with one another. It isn't, frankness isn't the major virtue. Charity is. Sometimes it's good to be quiet. Sometimes it's good to be silent. In this post-truth era, I mean, I know couples who are surviving because they won't talk about politics. They figured it out. You know, that's going to bust up our marriage, and we got a good thing going. We're not going to talk politics, and they stick by it. So charity, I think, is the guide.
How about this one? See prayer as a form of truth telling.
Oh, I like that. I borrowed that from one of the Himes, Brother Michael Himes gave a lecture in Toledo. Prayer is a form of truth telling. I love it, and I've used it a lot. Prayer puts us in right relationship with God. The truth is we're dependent upon God. The truth is God runs the world, we don't. The truth is we cannot control God or manipulate God. The truth is God is bigger than our own thoughts and transcends all of our own outlooks and images. That's a fundamental truth. And so we can use prayer to try to help us to become more authentic people. So I can, you know, an examination of conscience, I can say, well, where I usually go wrong is I'm always pushing myself. I tend to be hyperbole about my accomplishments. You know, I had 4 birds the other day, back 9. You know, is that my tendency? You know, is that where I tend to go? In prayer, in self-examination, you say, yeah, I'm always pushing it just a little bit. Just a little, I'm always just a little bit better than I really was when I tell my stories, you know. And I'm often self-serving in what I say. Mm. So now in prayer, I discover that, and I got to say to God, God, help me to be more authentic, more truthful in what I'm, in my personal relationships.
Yeah. I think there's several others, but I think that's a good stopping point, because it's a very pragmatic way for each of us as individuals to be better truth tellers.
Yeah, prayer is truth telling. Good. I'm willing to stop. I had so much more to say, but I'm willing to stop with that. That's prayer. Prayer gets us in right relationship with God. Prayer helps us get into better relationship with our spouses, our family members, our friends, our colleagues. And prayer helps me to be more conscious of my virtues, my good things, what I can trust in myself, and what goes off the rails.
Well said. Thank you, Father Basie.